you don't need to look away from that, but it's kind of acknowledging that people are different, but they might not be different in the way that you assume.
My name is Katharina, and I'm the Community and Event Manager at eCulture, a company that is on a mission to shape the world of unbiased hiring. Welcome to the Oops, I'm Biased podcast.
On today's episode of the podcast, I am talking to Mari Järvinen. Mari Järvinen has been on the podcast 3 times already. This is her 4th appearance covering biases with us. She is a favorite of ours. She'll give a quick introduction as well at the beginning, so I won't spoil too much. But let me say this, we are talking about cultural and social bias today, two concepts that couldn't be wider in scope. Nonetheless, they have a huge influence on the recruitment process, on hiring decisions, on the way that we interact with people, on the way that we advance candidates or reject them. So I'm very happy to talk to Mari today about all of it. And in the end, she also shares some tangible tips on how to minimize cultural and social bias in the recruitment process. So without further ado, I really hope you enjoy this episode. And now I bring you Mari Järvinen on cultural and social bias. Welcome, Mari, to today's episode. We're so happy to have you back.
Good to be back.
You have been, we just talked about it, you've been on the podcast multiple times. This is your 4th appearance talking about biases. Mm-hmm. Well, it speaks volumes about you as a guest. You're definitely a favorite of ours, and also your episodes are always favorites of our listeners. So happy to have you. In case you are listening for the first time to the Oops Unbiased podcast, I'm Katharina, I'm the host. I work for eCulture. Not necessarily as important as our guest today is Mari Järvinen. Would you like to give us a really quick introduction to who you are?
Sure. Yes. So I'm an organizational psychologist. I am from Finland. I'm actually living in Finland at the moment. But maybe also related to today's topic, I have also lived in different countries. I've lived in the US and in Sweden and in the Netherlands. So I'm always happy to talk about different types of bias, but this is a favorite one of mine as well, because it influences our thinking so much, and also how we kind of work with people from other places. So happy to be here again.
Great. What an introduction as well to our topic at hand. We are going to talk about cultural and social bias today. I think biases that probably are as wide as you could draw the lens in terms of how biases go. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can piece them apart a little bit and start with cultural bias at first. Could you give us a definition of what cultural bias is? And is there even a possibility to draw a definition for such wider scope?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that before this recording, and it is a very wide concept, because first we need to kind of define what culture is to understand what cultural bias could be. And what culture is, or at least one definition, is that it's a system that we learn of how to interpret things, how to interpret our surroundings, kind of the way we do things around here. And it's not necessarily just national cultures. It could be a workplace culture. It could be a family culture. It could be generational culture. It's just kind of this code that gives people hints as to how they should behave, or what's expected and acceptable and what's not, and so on. So with this background, thinking about kind of cultural bias, is one type of cultural bias is that we tend to interpret things that we see and here and people we meet according to the system that we've grown up with, or the what we've learned in our workplaces, in our generation. And then we might interpret people based on that system instead of what they actually are. So it might not be accurate at all what we assume about someone, because we have this system and they have a different system, and then they don't match, and that's when it becomes problematic. And then the other type of cultural bias is that we assume that a representative of a certain group is going to behave according to some sort of stereotype of a culture that we have in our own mind. For example, if a recruiter sees an Indian name on a CV, they might assume a whole lot of things about that person, that they might have a heavy accent, they might be a certain way in the workplace, or that might have nothing to do with how that person actually is, but more with our own cultural assumptions that we have. And then when we meet that person, also how they behave might go through that lens of our own culture. And then I'd like to mention that the extreme form, like when it becomes this bias that makes us think that our culture or some culture is superior to another one. Like we view someone negatively because we assume that as a perceived member of a culture, they can't be as good or better than someone else for a job, for example. So those are kind of ways that the cultural bias can come into play.
Yeah, that's so many ways. I think initially when I was preparing for the episode, your mind obviously goes into ethnic cultures, sort of then nationalism around it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's, as you say, there's so many subcultures, as you were talking about, generations, work environments, anything that can sort of create a set of norms that people believe or live by or work by. So it's a really great scope that you just gave, that cultural bias goes a lot deeper than what it initially says on the tin, as it were. Definitely want to jump more into the discrimination side, the racism side a little bit, and then also into the stereotyping side of it when we talk about recruitment and how it relates to cultural bias. But I would love to first jump into social bias, because that is also one that we're going to cover. How does social bias relate to cultural bias or compare?
Obviously in very many ways. And here again, we need to kind of define a little bit what we're talking about, because social bias as a combination of words could be used to describe just any bias that occurs in social situations, like stereotyping or affinity bias, which is kind of gravitating towards those who are similar to us or things like that. But then there's a specific type of social bias where a certain group of people is viewed more favorably or not favorably compared to another one, which can then lead to discrimination and biased choices in recruitment, for example. So when we talk about social bias, it's important also to think about, like, are we just talking about social interactions and how biases are in those? Or are we talking about like social bias in terms of like societies and the workforce and things like that? So racial or other types of differences that exist in society, or male, female, things like that.
Yeah, there's lots of different categories that we can put in this umbrella of social and cultural bias. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes it probably very vague for lots of people, also a bit sort of arbitrary. Okay, where do we draw the lines, right? But nonetheless important to talk about it and try to scope sort of where does it end, what does it affect. Which leads me a little bit into the next question around, I think we're going to talk about a few examples when we get to recruitment, but my first question would be around, you also mentioned already affinity bias. What other biases come into play when we talk about cultural and social bias?
Well, definitely a big one is stereotyping, because that's how we're kind of wired like that as people, because there's so much information coming at us. We have learned from birth really to kind of make these shortcuts. And if we see some attribute of something or we hear something, we tend to assume a whole lot of other things that in our minds come together with that attribute. So we stereotype people into these boxes and we then often start to confirm that. So confirmation bias comes next. So we have a stereotype about a person. Let's say that the Finnish person you're interviewing, you have a stereotype about Finnish people, and then you start looking for data that confirms your belief that you already have based on that stereotype. And it might be completely wrong compared to what the reality is with this individual who's sitting in front of you. So these are some of the common ones. And then there's also one that I actually hadn't thought about, but that was really good that you mentioned it in the in the brief that you gave me ahead of time, contrast effect. And this is especially important in recruiting, because there's often a pool of candidates, even when you've kind of narrowed down your selection to a few top ones. What tends to happen, and I've done probably thousands of assessments, the recruiting or hiring managers often judge people compared to each other instead of looking at each one individually. So if somebody scores really badly on all the tests and isn't very good in interviews, then someone else might look much better, even though they might not be a good fit for the role either. So kind of the contrast between something that you like and something that you don't like might lead you in the wrong direction. So those are the three first ones that come to mind, especially when it comes to recruiting.
Yeah, I think those are really great also in sort of succession of each other, right? You're talking about stereotyping bias first, then confirmation bias, and then contrast effect if you have a short list of candidates. Really great summary. Also want to quickly note that we have podcast episodes already on stereotyping bias and confirmation bias. So please go back, check them out, listen to them. There's a deep dive on each of those with lots of examples, and then also tips on how to minimize the impact. So I think that might also be useful in this context of the episode today. I'm going to dive a little deeper into the recruitment context and look at the hiring funnel, looking at different moments of when we will screen and assess and then decide to either hire or not hire a candidate. What moments do you think are most sensitive to social and cultural bias?
I think there's throughout the process, there's so many spots where we can apply bias, because I'm sure there's a podcast episode about if you have a brain, you're biased as well. But I know it's one of the messages that eCulture also pushes out a lot, which it's so very true. Anything that we see, anything that we perceive will kind of elicit these biases. So all the way from screening, or actually even before that, when we write our job descriptions and send them out to LinkedIn or wherever, like, this is who we want to hire, those might already be biased because we haven't really thought about like how we word things and whatever. But if we look at the screening, like, so here you have a bunch of candidates sending you their CVs and their motivation letters. We look at names, we maybe look at national origin, we look at pictures if there's a picture on the CV, the way you express things in motivation letters, for example, what you write on your CVs. So all of these also have social and cultural cues, and they trigger things in our brain, our stereotypes, even though we might not be aware of it. So we might think differently of a candidate who is from India than a candidate from America. And whether or not that's positive or negative for those candidates depends on our own story, what's in our own head, and not necessarily those candidates. So that's the first bit. But then every process or everything in the assessment as well, if we use a traditional assessment test, for example, there are some really good ones out there, but there are also many that are formulated based on Western scenarios, Western questions. And if somebody comes from a non-Western culture, it might already be difficult for them to understand what's being looked for. And if we don't look for that bias as well, that might be another one that kind of screens out people who would be good for the role. And then, of course, the interviews. There's another, we talked about that previously as well. Interview bias is a huge thing, because then there you're sitting with all those cues that come from people's like nonverbal cues and all kinds of other things. And then you might already have a picture in your head based on the CV and the motivation letter, and then you're confirming that often. So you might ask questions in the wrong way or in a culturally insensitive way. Then you're interpreting responses like eye contact. That's a thing that differs from culture to culture. How much do you have eye contact? How much do you smile? If you're talking to your potential manager, what's the assumption of a power distance? Like, are you in your culture, is it okay to ask questions to someone who's superior to you? It's like all these things come into play. So there's just a lot of situations that that this can come into play. And then after you hire a person, an onboarding can also be culturally biased or socially biased, and might exclude some people who are not used to the way your culture works in the workplace or in that country where you're hiring or whatever. So everywhere in the hiring process. So it was just a long answer, but it's like, there's so many places where you need to check for those.
Yeah. Really great summary of all of them. Wonderful way to wrap it all up in a bow and say, well, basically everywhere, probably everywhere where obviously there's interaction or you're looking at people's bio data or any results, then cultural bias comes in because you always come with your own lens of how you view the world. And that is heavily influenced by social factors, cultural factors, of course. I want to go back to the specific elements that you mentioned and dive a little deeper into those. When it comes to setting up job descriptions, obviously it can go both ways, right? Sometimes you have a need in your team where you think you need a little more diversity, whatever that diversity may look like. You might need a woman if it's gender. If the gender imbalance is quite big, or you need a specific skill set, how damaging or even productive could it be to be aware or not aware of that intrinsic bias, and how much could it hurt or actually then benefit if you're aware of that cultural bias, if you're looking for specific things?
Yeah. So obviously we know already a lot about like diverse teams just are better in performance and creativity, all kinds of things. There's a lot of scientific studies on that and also practical world studies on that. So that's definitely something that you would want to incorporate into your hiring process. And being aware of biases is always good, because then you can check for them and then you can figure out, okay, so if we want more diversity, who should we listen to? Like what story is it that we might not be understanding? So maybe reaching out to someone who has insight into whatever group we're looking for. Like, okay, we need, in order to create a product for a specific market, for example, is there someone who could tell us more about like what biases we should be looking up for? So that could be something that you could do to check, like, is this worded in such a way that it would actually appeal to these candidates? Or is there something off-putting about our job ad that could be harmful? So just being aware that you are going to be biased and then going to look for like ways to kind of mitigate that is always a good idea.
Yeah, that's great advice. I want to jump over the screening stage, because I think we've covered a lot on it in terms of stereotyping bias, and I think lots of people are generally aware of, well, through even blind recruitment as such a big term out there, that it might not be good to focus on demographics or being sidetracked by demographic data. But I want to go into assessments. You spoke about how lots of assessments, the traditional kind, more so, are very good or very influenced by Western cultural norms. Could you go a little deeper into what exactly that means and maybe even apply it to an example?
So it comes from the simple fact that they have been developed in Western countries, most of them, at least all the ones that I've used and the ones I know. So that is one thing. And of course, there are some, like I said, there are some better ones that have been checked also. And there are norm groups for different geographical areas, for example, or even countries. Like, it is very different to look at a Finnish person when compared to an international norm group of respondents and a Finnish one, because they will look different. So that's important. But it's important to note that everything that we make will have our own cultural imprint, and it could be the wording of things, and it could be the way, especially like scenario-based things are set up and how people talk in them and what kind of wordings are used. So those are very kind of prominent often, even for highly educated people, that could be something that you understand differently based on where you're from. I don't know if I answered your question in that one, but
yeah. Difficult question as well. I'm assuming that there might be some listeners now listening in and thinking, oh no, I'm using an assessment and I don't know if it's very very focused on Western cultures. How do you find out whether your assessment is just really biased in that way?
Well, one thing you can always do is check, has it been scientifically validated? Are there studies that have looked into how different kinds of groups perform on it, and are there differences? And this is not only related to cultural bias or cultural differences. It could also be neurodiversity. Has there been a study, for example, checking how people with autism score on these tests? Have there been different norm groups in different countries? And how is the, if there's an international norm group behind the test, then what's the composition of that? Is it diverse enough? So just going back, and if you don't have that information from your test manufacturer, then I would say that's probably a little bit bad, because all the really good ones, they can show you the science. Like, this is how we tested it. This is what it shows. And many of them will also say what the limitations of their tests are. It's like, you can use it for this and this and this, but it's not suitable for this purpose. So those are things that you can always go and check and try to find those answers. And if it turns out there's no information, then I think you should probably get a different one.
Yeah, that's good advice. I think, looking into, where does it originate? How is it validated? I think is a great way of at least checking if it's worth continuing with it in your recruitment process or not. But definitely a hard one, I guess, because it's so difficult to step out of your own cultural frame, as it were, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then again, well, research, there's lots of science out there who does it for us. We don't have to reinvent the wheel in terms of assessing whether our assessments are biased or not.
Right.
In terms of interviews, is there any specific moment in an interview or any specific question that you can think of that people just should shy away from or sort of scrap off of their list in terms of not inducing too much cultural bias?
I don't know if there's a specific question. Maybe I would, going back to the interview bias in general, like avoid questions that are not related to the role, like chatting about hobbies, chatting about free time, things like that, that often bring that affinity bias. Because if you happen to have the same hobby with someone, you probably view that person more nicely than some other person. But I would say have a as structured as possible process for your interviews. So it's not necessarily a specific question that you should avoid. It's just, except for the illegal ones, like you can't ask. But just think about having the same questions for everybody, and so that they're relevant for the job, and really kind of trying to look at each individual and not the stereotypes that you might have about their national culture or something else. Because even though statistically, for example, Americans, if we look at them as a group, they probably are more individualistic than many Asian cultures, for example. This has been shown in studies as well. And I'm not saying that's not true, but that doesn't mean that each individual American is more individualistic than each individual person from a certain Asian culture. So really kind of trying to scope in on that person and not stereotypes or other cultural assumptions that you might have. So I guess that would be a tip in the other direction.
Which is great. I think, it can be so easy as well to think that you can connect to people or that you can understand people based on the assumptions that you make and the stereotypes that you have. Sort of making, because that's what all our brain does is, right, is making sense of the world through the information that we're given based on what we already know. But then, that can be very, very also discriminatory, as you mentioned earlier in interviews, if you ask questions that might be very culturally insensitive. Do you have any resources that you could recommend to our listeners now who might think, well, I'm sort of at the start of understanding cultural bias? I think everyone's aware of how damaging discrimination and racism and exclusion is, not only in the workplace, but everywhere. But maybe if someone wants to learn more about cultural differences or cultural bias in general, where could they go?
Well, Equulture's website is really good for all kinds of resources. So, and you've done a great job with collecting those into one place. But then also I have a favorite book that I really like. It's called Diversifying Diversity by Purnima Luthra. She is, I think, a professor, a researcher. But she has also does consulting for companies when it comes to this. But the book is very, very informative. And it's a thick book with lots of information about all sorts of different biases and different ways to be an active ally to different groups. So it also has exercises and questions and like very practical kind of like, this is how these biases come to play in the workplace. And this is how you could kind of avoid them or do something to improve at least in your workplace. So that's one that I would definitely recommend.
That's a great recommendation. I'll link the book that you just mentioned in the show notes so that people can then also go and check it out. I also want to say I did not tell Mari to tell you guys about Equulture and the content we have. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you might be aware that we have a bunch of blogs. We also do occasional webinars on topics like this one today. But I think it's just great to continue your education on wherever you are on the knowledge spectrum of well, cultural differences, cognitive mm-hmm. biases that influence the way that we see other people, the way that we make decisions. So I think it's wonderful to share resources that people might not be aware of. Another one that I really like is The Culture Map by Erin Meyer. It's one that is erring on the side of cultural differences and understanding how people communicate from different cultures. But that might also be a start for you if you have an international team or want to diversify your team in terms of, well, if we're talking about simple demographics and not necessarily skill sets, then that might also be one worth checking out. I'll link that as well in the show notes. My last question to you, and then we're already done. Time flies when we talk about cultural bias, I guess. Is there anything else that you could give in terms of advice to our listeners, what they can do starting tomorrow to minimize the impact of cultural and social bias in their recruitment process?
I think thinking about how you could look at the individual more than some sort of group assumptions, because and also not looking away from cultural differences. Because like you said, like the diversity is also a huge richness that you can have. And there are differences in, for example, national cultures, how we're programmed to think, what our relationship to time is, what our relationship to power distance is, how polite or blunt we are. So it's, you don't need to look away from that, but it's kind of acknowledging that people are different, but they might not be different in the way that you assume, even though they belong to a certain demographic or a certain culture or something like that. They as individuals might have left that country because they didn't fit in. So just kind of not assuming, but instead of asking and having these discussions and dialogues with people and trying to understand what kind of makes that person tick instead of applying that bias to them. And then if we talk about recruitment specifically, whenever you are assessing candidates, figure out several ways to measure each of the attributes that you've decided that you need for that position. So it's not just based on one impression that you got from a candidate that you then stereotype and then confirmed and so on. So kind of just check for bias along the way is what I would say.
Those are two really great tips and I think very accessible. The asking questions, definitely not an easy one. Instead of assuming mm-hmm. asking questions, I think that's one that I practice every day. But it's definitely a good muscle to train. Because it brings the bias from an unaware state to a bit more of an aware state that you think, okay, mm-hmm. let me check myself a little on that individual level. And then, assessing candidates via multiple ways for the attributes that you need is also a really good one. What you said earlier as well stuck with me in terms of having other people check you for your own mm-hmm. cultural bias who might be different to you. So I think that's also a great one to note. Maybe you want to explain a little more what that means or where that can be applied.
Yeah, so for example, interviews. having a diverse interviewer pool and maybe interviewing together with someone else who is different in some way, who thinks differently or whatever, just to kind of check, like, was I fair? Was I unbiased? Did I ask the right questions, or did I flip into this affinity mode, you know, when I heard something nice that the person said? So just checking that. And I guess that would be my advice, to have a diverse interviewer pool, and also, like, subject yourself to the scrutiny of someone else checking your bias, and in a non-confrontational way. It's kind of like, thank them for catching you if you did something that seemed biased, and like, thanks for pointing that out. You can always improve. You can start where you are, and then you can always improve.
Yeah. Ah, what a great way to end on. Thank you so much, Marty, for joining us again on the podcast to cover cultural and social bias. I hope you enjoyed this one. And we
Thanks
hope to see you
me.
Back.
Yeah,
great to hear. For everyone who listened in today, please go check out our other episodes if you haven't already. Confirmation bias, stereotyping bias was mentioned. Interviewer bias was also mentioned. So please go back if you haven't listened yet. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.